The following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, Rootsworth.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the 5-H Show. And the 5-H's stand for Health, Happiness, Harmony, Humor, and Humanity. And here on the 5-H Show, we have been celebrating humanity, in a certain type of humanity here in particular. Our neighbors who are stepping up to the plate to run for office in our beautiful Green Mountain State. And so today is August 11th. 2024. So if you're listening live out there, you know that that I am here live in the station today with my guest. We have a candidate who is running for office in Addison County. Her name is Leslie Bienvenue. And she came here today to the station. We are lucky once again to have one of our neighbors willing to travel a little bit here for community radio, which is the greatest. It's a place where we can share the airwaves with our neighbors, where they can talk about things that they are interested in. And here on the 5-H Show, we do not endorse any particular political party or person. We are simply making a concerted effort to bring our neighbors' voices to the airwaves, whatever their political perspective. Our intention is to improve our community's overall health, no matter who wins the race, by finding common ground with each other. We are placing a special focus this summer and fall on our neighbors who are running for office, because their courage to get involved and speak up about their concerns is giving us hope, and we'd like to share that hope with our listeners. We strive to include voices from across the spectrum and beyond. Please be in touch if you know of a candidate who is interested in joining us on the air. You can find out more about our show and how to get in touch at amyvt.com, A-M-Y-V-T like Vermont.com. And let me see here. And we have here today Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, it was an honor. I got to meet you. I'll let our listeners know that where I met Leslie was at a rally that our previous guest, Gregory Thayer, had organized.
Yes.
At the State House here just a few months ago, I think.
Yes, it was back in June.
Yeah, and we just dove right in. We started having this amazing conversation, and I was like, wow, you really need to come on the radio with me, because I want to continue this conversation and introduce you to all of our listeners.
And I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So you are running for Senate.
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. In Addison County, which is just sort of a neighbor of Washington County here.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Can you name off just some of the towns there that you'd be serving?
Middlebury and, you know, Ripton and Lincoln, Starksboro, Orwell, Shoreham, Panton, Vergennes, Leicester, Salisbury. That's a large group. Yeah. Of 22 towns in Addison County. Goshen is another community, the town of Addison, town of Bridport.
Wow, that's a lot of territory to cover.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so tell us about yourself and where you're from and what got you interested in all of this.
All right. Well, I graduated from high school in the Vergennes area, and I graduated from college with my Master Business Administrator degree. I also graduated with a degree in early childhood education, a master's in directorship credential. And then eventually I went to UVM and completed my Master Gardener certification through their program and studied forestry management. And I wanted to teach children about environmental science. And so I thought that would be a really great resource for me to do so. And it turned out to work out really well.
Yeah. Oh, so that's what the MG, Master Gardener.
Yes, EMG, Extension Master Gardener.
Yeah. Oh, what a great combination, business and children. And any particular age group that you're...
what I studied was the 0 to 8 year old age group, and that I tended to gravitate towards the first and second graders. I found that I enjoyed children who like to converse more and engage verbally. I enjoyed their conversations and their storytelling, as you spoke about earlier. That really truly was fun for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. That's such a fun age group.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they are very verbal.
Yeah, and they get a little more hands-on, you know, doing activities, whether, like you said, studying forestry management trees or bugs or, you know, water. You know, you can do more play activities while they're still learning.
Yeah, so you've spent some time as a teacher, too?
Yes, yes. I've had a few years actually being in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I was a program director for a short period of time with an infant group. So that was, you know, a good experience, but infants don't, you know, speak. So there was lots of nonverbal communication that was, a really good learning experience, trying to evaluate children and determine what their needs were. And so, and with experience, you get pretty good at determining what's their needs are without them being as vocal, but you're also teaching them to be vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun as well. And then I was substitute teaching mostly in kindergarten and first and second grade when I was doing some substitute teaching. And so that's when I began to realize I really enjoyed the older children. And like I said, they in more interactive communication.
Yeah, and substitute teaching takes a lot of courage.
It does. Yes, going in and not knowing the atmosphere, it can be. When you do a lot of substitute teaching in one or two schools, it gets better as time goes on. The students and the staff know who you are, and we all get more comfortable with each other. And yes, so that the children are happy, and we all are happy, and there's less stress.
Yes, yes.
But about where do I go, what do I do?
Yeah, but it might have prepared you well for politics, right? To just be able to talk
exactly.
to anybody.
Exactly.
Take
lots
it as
of,
it comes.
Spontaneous learning. Exactly. And so, a moment of teaching shows up there, and you just got to grab it and go with it. So one that comes to mind was I had a small group of boys that were having a conflict. And so they weren't letting each other speak and talk about what was going on. And so I began promoting the freedom of speech with this small group of children. By the time we were done, we had a judge, which was me. And then we had a plaintiff, and then we had a witness. We had the defendant. And so the children responded to the way I organized this, you know, this little hearing. And this is in second grade, and they solved the problem, and everybody was happy when they were all done. And all of them were really proud of the fact that they got to have their turn to speak and say what they wanted without being interrupted, because that's an issue with young children. They tend to interrupt each other and not, or don't allow the other child to finish saying what they had to say. And and so that whole civic experience was definitely one for the journal.
Yeah.
And so and then we started carrying that through into some of the other classrooms. And something else that came up too was we had an issue with people getting into other people's backpacks, and sometimes they were just trying to be helpful. You know, there was a note that needed to go into that child's backpack. And so there was a, one child who's the leader in the classroom, and she was a real good helper. And so she was doing that, but it was upsetting to the other students. So I brought up again the search and seizure, and we spoke, in child terms about, this doesn't belong to you. We have to, take care of our own belongings and stay in our own space. And that if you get into other people's, belongings, you need to have permission from them. And it turned out, again, a spontaneous teaching moment, and it worked really, really well. And after, you know, we had our little meeting and explained everything about the importance of this, and then you don't get blamed if something, you know, bad happens. All solved. Everybody was happy. We no longer had any issues. And again, that was another one for the journal. And then the rapport with the children and I began to develop more and more in the classroom. And then COVID came around. And so I was no more substitute teaching for a while. I ended up not going back and got into, running into politics. And so, but yes, that was a really good experience for the kids and for me, and I enjoyed it a lot. I just saw this huge improvement in the communication amongst the kids themselves, and saw them going over and being polite and respectful and asking each other first before just, you know, grabbing stuff and doing things and
Wow, what a great testimony that our government structure works, right?
Yes, yes.
and that children, it comes naturally to us as humans at any age.
And I think starting young, too, makes a huge, huge difference, you know, teaching them that respect and that sharing and caring at the earliest age as possible just carries right through to adulthood. So
it does. Those are really important years.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So you have a background in education and also business administration. You want to say a little bit about that?
Sure. I started off in business, like right out of high school. Started off in the tourism profession and working in the office and reservations. And I was in that profession for 12 years. And then I moved into working in construction for 15 years as an office manager. Mm-hmm. And so that was, a really good experience in building homes and excavation and studying climate and heating systems. I was actually a plumbing and heating contractor that I was employed with, and so that was really valuable, wells and water systems. And and then from there I ended up doing a little bit of retail for a short period of time, some small little stores, and again, still all of it was engaging with people, as I began to recognize that I really, truly enjoy working with people. And then the education piece of it came into play.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, ended up with a horrible injury, and I ended up having to be out of work for several years. And so now I'm back into becoming employed and working again and working with people.
Fantastic. Yeah, and all of that, the heating and cooling and water and construction, and all of that, and even the retail. I mean, this is where the rubber is hitting the road for a lot of Vermonters, right? Are these environmental policies that are affecting where we can live and how we can live, and our business, the health of our small businesses is really in crisis here in Vermont, it seems.
Yes,
like.
It is.
As everywhere, probably.
And because through the tourism and also through construction, I studied VOSHA regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, all of my, practical experience and my educational degrees, it all seems to fit really well into what I feel is an important and qualified background for being a senator.
Fantastic. So what other political activities have you done?
I have actually volunteered through I don't know where to start. 4-H. Let's start with 4-H. I was a 4-H student as a teenager, and I also became a 4-H leader for several years. And so that was, again, a good experience and learning how to teach the children how to operate a meeting and treasurer's reports and again, public speaking. And I most of our projects, of course, were around agriculture, mm-hmm. and that we studied and learned. I also was an elementary school board member for a couple of years in a small town. And again, VOSHA regulations came up and business management. We had teacher contracts that came due the time that I was, on the board. And so that was, again, a really great, valuable experience on trying to keep a balance between a budget and keeping really good teachers employed and paid well and happy. And VOSHA showed up again in the school system. Way back then, our school had went through that whole asbestos removal. I don't know if you remember back years ago, some of the older schools and buildings, we had to go through that whole asbestos removal. So our school was one of them. So that, you know, that again was a volunteer project and really valuable learning experience through that as well. A festival on the green is also another project that I'm a committee member. Currently, that's one that I'm involved in now. And we just had our music festival, you know, a couple weeks ago. It always is the week after July 4th. And we like to bring lots of different genres of music to our community. We have lots of artists, you know, in Addison County and all over Vermont and New England, and we like to promote art through that avenue, and we all take donations to support this project. It's an open and free event that we hold on the green in Middlebury. And then I am a member of my Republican Party, so one of the projects I have worked on very heavily was just to promote voting in some of our younger people and to talk to them about the Republican Party and what we stand for, and to understand and know the process, because many of them did not understand or know what the difference was between a Democrat and a Republican and what it meant to be an independent. And so I was able to engage them in conversations and just convince them to go and at least register to vote and find out what that whole process was and what their rights were as a registered voter, and get them to go into a town clerk's office because they'd never been there. Uh-huh. And, you know, what happens into a town, you know, in the town clerk's office? What are they doing?
Yeah.
Because I was getting into that 25-year-old to, like, 32-year-old group, and some of them were, you know, just married, and some were just starting to have children. So it was really, really great to see some of them actually go and register to vote and go into the town clerk's office just to see what the building looked like and just to meet the people who were there. And so that was very rewarding in that process. And let's see. Oh, I know. As a teenager, my dad was a fireman. So my mom joined the fire department auxiliary. So she invited me to go along with her. And so that was my very first experience in learning how to run an official meeting and the election of officers. And we just did fundraisers, lots of fundraising events, raising money to build a new fire station in our community and get new equipment for our firemen. And we needed a new fire truck back in those days. And so again, the VOSHA regulations and, you know, whole business management piece of it. And I learned a lot about advertising and marketing through that experience, putting ads in the newspaper. And we all were designing, at first we were just designing homemade posters. And then eventually a couple of us were really good at designing our posters. So then we had them printed and where to hang them in the community and what the laws were about where you can hang signs and put signs and where you can't. It was really a very valuable experience. So consistently, I seem to have been involved in business management and education. I also was volunteering at the Sheldon Museum over in Addison County, studying history and teaching history, teaching storytelling. And, one of the tours that I gave was teaching the children about where does water come from, and we were focusing on the kitchen in our museum because there is no sink, there is no running water, there's no stove, and just doing this great comparison for the children about what our life was like today and what life was like back then and the struggles they went through. And so I enjoyed my experience with the Sheldon Museum, and again, that piece of it goes back to the, you know, education. And I think that covers about all of it.
Wow. So that, yeah, I've always said volunteering is the most important job, right? All
yes.
the most important stuff. And how wonderful that you had it in you. It sounds like from when you were young with your mom starting you out.
Yes.
To just put yourself out there and get involved, find out what you could do. And you learned so much along the way and fell into history and arts and all kinds of other subjects.
I did.
And town clerks are as cool and important as the president.
Yes.
I agree.
Yes.
Yes. To go find your local government. That's a really great thing to connect youth with that.
Yes. Yeah. There's lots of, yeah, record keeping. Absolutely. And the importance of filing documents and what we need them for. And
mm-hmm.
like you said, town clerks, and you're getting back into history, the history of, you know, our properties. And
yeah, the maps and property rights, right?
Exactly.
So it all gets back to those constitutional rights you were teaching the second graders about.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So I just began to recognize this huge, big, you know, circle of a connection here
mm-hmm.
about, you know, my identity and just feeling very strongly that I have a lot to knowledge and expertise to bring to, you know, being a senator and getting us all more fiscal balanced up in Montpelier. A lot of people have been talking to me about how stressed out they are with, you know, taxes and how everything is skyrocketing, and they're really worried about how they're going to pay for it, and people don't even know where to cut back anymore.
Right, with everything rising across the board.
Right.
So let's get into in a minute just what you've been hearing as you're going around the county. But first, let's see the political landscape. So you're running as a Republican, and so
yes.
you're going off into the primary first, right? The
13th,
yes. 13th of August, coming right up in a couple of days.
Yes.
Tell us about that and just sort of what the steps are going here.
Okay. I have two other people that I'm running against. And so I have worked really hard at getting involved with campaigning around my public libraries. I've been a member of a library since I was a teenager and have always been part of those organizations and what a valuable resource they are to our community. And so I just got involved with going and visiting all of the libraries around Addison County, introducing myself, attending book talks and art classes, and promoting, you know, the Republican Party and talking to people about what, you know, what their needs are and where they see we need to have some quality control improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And education was one area they're concerned about, curriculum. So I focused on, you know, our libraries and really getting them to know me. Am I getting to know them and sitting down in a casual way through an activity versus my actually, you know, doing this strong campaign of just like going right in, hi, my name is Leslie, I'm a Republican and I'm running for the Senate. It was just more very laid back, and so I didn't usually tell people I was running for the Senate until after the, you know, the evening was over. I was as towards the evening, then I would start speaking up after they already, you know, we already got to know each other and was talking in a casual way about subject matter. So I just had feel like there was a really great rapport by my being more casual and down to earth in the way that I approach people and talk to them and how I found out, you know, what their concerns were.
Right. That is a very unique way to hear from people, that you were putting the listening first.
Yes.
You know. Yeah, what a great way to go about doing that. And so there are two Democrats in your senator seats
yes.
right now, right?
Yes.
So you'd be challenging.
Yes. So
one
I've got. We're hoping both Republicans can move into those places there, that we have had Democrats in Addison County for the Senate for many, many years now, and we really truly believe that the Republicans are more knowledgeable and educated about business management and can go in and do some auditing and some evaluating of our programs and move money around, you know, allocate over here and, you know, tighten up over here a little bit better than what we feel we've been seeing the Democrats do. It's time for us Republicans to have a turn to, you know, see what we can do to, you know, make people happy again and to take that stress away.
Stress.
And, you know, get the kind of programming that we, you know, the people in Vermont want.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What are you hearing, and then what would be some strategies that you've been brainstorming about?
Okay, so one of the strategies that I came up with that came out of my substitute teaching experiences was that I began to recognize there was a lot of composting going on in our cafeterias, mm-hmm. and it just was over the top. So I ended up talking to some of the cafeteria staff and ended up making comments and talking to the principal and kept bringing about what would happen if we went and redid the menus mm-hmm. and surveyed the children about what they like to eat and what they don't like to eat so that we can, you know, get the composting that, you know, this huge gigantic bowl down to, you know, a couple of cups per day. So I had some success in doing that.
Great.
So that, you know, the whole initial purchasing of our food was reduced. Mm-hmm. The children, you know, were eating the food, and then there was less composting because composting causes equipment and labor. And so one school saved like $250 by doing that kind of an evaluation. And there's money that went over into the school library and purchased books or a software program mm-hmm. for our computers. And that's a perfect example of, you know, reallocating funds instead of just, you know, let's raise taxes, you know, 3% more and to, you know, meet our needs. And so I did that in like 3 schools. Mm-hmm. And I tried to, and this is as a volunteer, so I tried to get, you know, other parents and other schools to, you know, go through this evaluation, and based on what I saw, it didn't, like, spread the way I had hoped it would. Mm-hmm. So that is on my agenda.
Great.
To go in and do that evaluation and see, you know, how much we can save and put it elsewhere so that way property taxes don't have to be, you know, increased. And so that was one of my ideas. And then recyclable materials. You know, when you teach children, lots of times they may have to do, like, drafting. Mm-hmm. And so we can pull all that paper that was in the recycling and give it to the children, and they can create their little notebook. So they, I don't know, maybe they're trying to write a poem. And so they're always going to have, you know, a first and second draft and a final copy. Well, let's use that recycled paper for, you know, that writing assignment, or even doing collaging, and like Henry Matisse, who taught us about collaging, and using the recycled paper for art projects and instead of buying new materials. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of prompted that again, because I feel like we go through periods of time where we do that a lot, and then everybody gets into new art supplies and we get away from that again. And so, and I know we have some wonderful art stores, you know, around Vermont where we have some great materials, but I want to keep it combined to both, you know, fresh and new materials, but also using all of our recycled papers again. That's going to save money for all of us. And just have us be just a little bit more stricter about being conservative in that way.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you just hit on a couple of my pet peeves when I was working in the schools. Was just the waste of food, waste of paper and supplies, mm-hmm. and the kids are learning that. Like, they're learning that way of being, right?
Yes.
So we're also sort of teaching them the importance of reduce, reuse, and then recycle. Recycle is like the third one on the
exactly.
list.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And yeah. reusable products, like you said, instead of, you know, using plastic bags. And although we can get into reusable plastic bags.
Right.
And anyway, so those were some of my ideas, just to getting a little more stricter about it. You know, during that World War II period, when we went through the Depression, we really had to, you know, have a strict lifestyle changes. And so we need to do that, I think, more without, you know, pinching too hard and hurting businesses,
mm-hmm.
and
It's a balance.
Yeah, it is a balance.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, and what else are you hearing from people out there that they're worried about?
The other thing they are worried about in education was hearing a lot about gender. Mm-hmm. They did not want to have those types of conversations going on in the school system. They wanted the school to focus on academia and to stick to, practical science and studying anatomy and staying away from the whole emotional piece of gender identity and leaving it for parents to handle. And that maybe at the high school level, it could be opened up a little bit better. But most parents really truly wanted the school to stick to, like I said, academics, and feel that that is what's most important, and that there would be less discrimination, less bullying going on in the school system if they focused that way. And we separated the government from the church many mm-hmm. years ago, and that helped with discrimination issues, and I think we need to do that again with this gender identity concerns that have come up in the school.
Oh, that's an interesting analogy. Here, hold on. Let me let folks know I'm speaking today with Leslie Bienvenue, and she is running as a Republican in Addison County for the Senate, one of the Senate seats. Yeah, and so can you say more about that, about how it translates to the separating of religion? So this is sort of like an ideology or something, like sort of taking
exactly.
a personal preference out of just the structure that everyone gets.
Right. Even back when I was, a young child, we had prayer, in the schools.
Oh, okay.
And so, we had to take, because of the discrimination and then even diversity in the various churches in our community and the different types of music and the different types of prayers. And so
it would get complicated, right?
It can get complicated. And so when we're talking about gender, we're thinking it's the same thing. There's all different types of gender identities that are coming out, and their spiritual culture is coming out, which is, similar to like the church. Mm-hmm. And so unless you happen to be studying, and which usually doesn't happen until college level, religion, mm-hmm. They still wanted to focus on studying, anatomy, studying the skeleton, studying the nervous system, studying our organs, and so obviously studying, reproduction, but we need to study the natural and normal processes of science first, mm-hmm. and understand how all of that works and what it means, and then move on to the identity concerns and or choices and decisions that people want to make. But I just think that's important, having a 12 or 15 year old going in and having an operation at such a very young age to their body. I just don't feel like they're educated enough, that they're knowledgeable enough to make such a huge, life decision. And that those types of decisions, I think, should wait until they have completed high school and are in their 20s and really understand the law of science, basically. Mm-hmm. And if they still feel the way that they feel, then they have the right to do, what they want with their lives and establish their own identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sort of like family values. We're sort
yes.
of teasing apart the family values, which families across Vermont have starkly different values as
yes.
far as this goes.
It is huge. And so, we want to keep civil rights really valuable and important, but still we're trying to promote, the law of science and family values. And so, again, it's a balance,
mm-hmm.
but education is so huge, in this issue, that I would like to see that wait until, you know, the maturity is there to make such a life-altering decision. Yeah,
I was heartened, first off, meeting you and your willingness to discuss the subject, because there cannot be a consensus in Vermont on introducing the subject into school and the way it's being done, because we've never had the conversation.
Right.
So we know there is no consensus. And I'm a health educator, and over the past, you know, decade in the schools, I've noticed how they removed human biology from the Common Core standards. I was going through, you know, we have this free box at school.
Yes.
Where the teachers put all their free stuff, you know, at the end of the year that they mm-hmm. don't need. And I was finding all these cool anatomy dolls, and, you know, the liver comes out, and it was all these really cool expensive anatomy gear, you know,
right.
for like teaching fourth grade
great.
Anatomy. So
yes.
I went to the fourth grade science, you know, teacher, and I said, wow, why are you chucking all this stuff? He goes, oh, we don't have to teach that anymore. It's been removed from the science standards. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it had been. And my students were begging me to teach biology, begging me. They wanted to know about
right.
their bodies. So it's kind of interesting that they took away biology at the same time that they're bringing in more of an ideology instead.
Right.
So I'm really, the more I talk to
That's
parents,
discouraging.
The more. Discouraging. Yeah. And parents are
and I understand,
across the board.
Yeah. I understand that why they did that. And I understand, you know, that they're nervous about, you know, the whole gender issue and pushing it off and prolonging, you know, that study. But, yeah, we've got to keep a balance. And, again, it's maturity, you know.
Right.
It really truly is maturity. And so maybe it needs to wait until high school. I'm not sure. But we still need to teach, you know, anatomy. We want to encourage people you know, become doctors and nurses, for example. And we know from lots of experience that the earlier on that you teach children about anything,
mm-hmm.
they will establish an interest in it and then carry it through.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, we talked about it before. We are trying to find a balance. And so I don't think that, you know, eliminating, you know, biology from the school system that drastically is going to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if it's, you know, it's natural. It's sort of how kids, and they're curious about
right.
it already.
It's like human beings became curious, you know, the Neanderthals all the way back, you know, mm-hmm. the beginning of time. You know, we're doing that even amongst, you know, animals. They were, you know, needed to survive and were poking around inside, you know, the body of a dead deer or a bear and, mm-hmm. you know, what's this and how does this work? And I mean, that's how we got our plumbing system, if you think
right.
about it.
Yeah, and our electrical system everything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is, you know, through that exploration. So there's mm-hmm. there's value. But anyways, and so, yeah, I think that we need to do some, again, quality control, some auditing and evaluating about just exactly at what age we can teach, you know, what type of science and maybe the whole reproduction piece of science should wait until, you know, later. But we still are having to deal with the natural sciences of, you know, boys and girls and being attracted to each other and the whole chemistry and romance and making sure that they're educated, you know, about birth control, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the studies are showing that, you know, typically 16 was always the average age for, you know, teaching reproduction. And I am reading and still seeing that, you know, even in Washington, D.C. with the studies, that still seems to be the right age and that we're teaching, at, you know, too young.
Yeah. I mean, my students actually helped me sort of put the brakes a little bit on the curriculum that I had been inherited, you know, and sort of been shown, oh, this is what you should be teaching and this kind of thing. And it was constantly ramping up, like what we were supposed to teach at what level was constantly getting more and more intense and more towards this ideology that it's heading towards. But the kids themselves, you know, would like dive under their desks, you know, with certain, and I just got the feeling of like which student, you know, which grade levels even wanted to talk about this. And I think you've
right.
got that right.
They were
it's usually a lot later.
Right.
Yeah.
And they just were not ready. And I know that I personally was not interested in boys until just around 16 years old. I knew they were there. I knew how our bodies worked, but I was just too busy, I don't know, playing, swimming, painting my fingernails, you know, reading books, doing art projects, bicycling. And at 12 and 13 and 14 years old, I was not interested in sex at all. Mm-hmm. And didn't even know about a gender, you know, identity at that point in time. So I think we have to be careful about going too young and teaching children.
Yeah, and a lot of what I learned was from the parents who right. would hear that I was the new teacher, and they wanted to sit down, and what are you going to be teaching, and when are you going to be
exactly.
teaching?
Exactly.
And I learned a lot from the different communities, too, that I taught in. Each community was very different. They had their own nuances, their own challenges, you know, with particular drugs or particular lifestyle things or media.
Right.
You know, the kids are accessing all kinds of media now, you know, so different communities had different things they needed at that particular time, so I could be responsive to that, you know, instead of just coming in with a canned thing. And I'm curious about your experience on the school board. How are you feeling about local control over content and curriculum?
I think that that is important. Parents should have the right to you know, notice and recognize what curriculum we are teaching, and recognizing if there's a deficiency, and have a right to, you know, make requests. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, whether it's geography or something to do with the natural sciences, and they have a right to say, you know, we're living in a farming community. Would you please, you know, teach more about, plant science, photosynthesis, you know, pollination. I would like you to teach our children more about these subjects. You know, my son's in the sixth grade, and he doesn't know anything about any of this. And then we should be, it's their money,
mm-hmm.
and it's their children. So we need to be listening to, you know, their concerns. And astronomy, too, is another area that I promoted with children to keep them distracted from, you know, dating too much and getting into that too early was, you know, constellations and the comets and our northern lights, the aurora borealis, we've had some beautiful sights recently, not here in Vermont. At least I didn't get to see them. It was too cloudy. Yeah. But distracting children with this really good, healthy, important earth science mm-hmm. that is just beautiful to study and learn about and understand how it operates.
And it is all sort of spiritual, putting us in our place in our
yes.
world
yes.
and putting it in perspective, you know, and feeling the sense of a greater, you know, thing going on that we're all part
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, conserving and preserving and protecting our earth is all about understanding how it works mm-hmm. and making sure that we take care of it properly. And so that's, you know, that's just one example of that focus, because we are seeing more and more homeschooling, more and more churches doing, you know, school programs at their churches and taking children out of the public school system, which is making everything complicated. And I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a right, like we just already discussed. And so I just want there to not be so much you know, discrimination, and I want there to be more diversity. And so we really truly need to go into our school systems and do you know, an audit on their curriculum, audit on money, and get into some better quality performance.
Yeah, fantastic. And so do you see yourself, if what committees do you think would be good ones for you up there at the State House?
I actually just got appointed to a school board.
Oh, congratulations.
An Otter Valley Unified Union. So I'm hoping that I can do that. But education is absolutely one of them.
Mm.
And finance is the other. And I also, crime is another one that's of interest also, you know, with me. You know, recently there's been all this news media out of Burlington, and the most recent one was that the police department had 16 violent encounters with this same man who was a foreigner, as I understand it, before they could get him prosecuted.
Wow.
That was upsetting to me. I mean, the police are not safe. The rest of society is not safe. And then a few months ago, there was another a story similar to that, where there was, like, I think there may have been like 14 or 15 violent encounters with a criminal. And I kept thinking, oh my God, my first reaction is, oh my goodness, the police officers themselves having to deal with this violence, and then not arresting this person and keeping everybody else in the community safe is also, you know, an issue. And so I want to get in and find out what the policies are, what the procedures are, exactly how much evidence you have to have, who's supposed to be getting the evidence, is the state's attorney's office doing their job, and are you putting safety as the priority?
Mm-hmm.
Safety has to come first. And I realize, you know, they got this discrimination, you know, issue going on when it comes to criminals and confidentiality. But safety has to come first. These people cannot go around and just be attacking all of us and attacking the police and stealing. And we have to put a stop to it and get some peace into our community. And so I would like to really, truly work in that agency to find out, you know, what's going on, what we're doing wrong, and how to fix it.
Excellent.
And so, you know, I've had some tragedy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't get handled well.
So you know.
Yes, I know personally, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's taking it seriously. Yeah, thank you.
It's time. I haven't seen any improvements. I haven't seen any changes
mm-hmm.
on...
in a good way. I mean,
that's
probably
right.
A lot of
in,
other...
In a good, that, right, in a good way. And mm-hmm. so based on some of this studying I've done, mm-hmm. I did volunteer at Women Safe for a few years. And
which is like a domestic violence
yes,
program.
They have done lots and lots of studies, and even coming down from Washington, D.C., and rehabilitating, it hardly works.
Right.
They are just, the criminals are just becoming more clever, more deceitful, more sneaky, and getting their needs met, you know, illegally.
Mm-hmm.
So it became harder to, you know, catch them, but the crimes were still going on. People
yeah.
were still getting, you know, assaulted, and there's murders were still going on, and vandalism and all of that, and it's not stopping. So they've got to do something different. And
right.
I think we need to be stricter to deal with it. And so I ended up studying accidentally about rabid dogs and their brain virus that they have,
mm-hmm.
and that there's no cure for it. And so... what do you do?
Right. Yeah.
It is heart-wrenching, but we need to protect and keep the rest of our communities, our citizens, you know, safe. And I think we need to be stricter.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. My background's in domestic and sexual violence as well. I worked for a little agency in Hardwick, like Women Safe.
Oh, yes.
And also in Barrie. I was there, too, for 10 years. And so, yeah, there's that sense of entitlement that just seems to, you know, increase the, you know, the level of abuse. You know, the abuser feels so entitled to
right.
do what they're doing. And so the more that doors just keep opening for them and, you know, they're allowed
exactly.
to keep going, it feeds the fire.
Right, exactly. They're like, oh, I got away with this again. Oh, let's go do something a little, you know, trickier and something a little smarter. And oh, I did it again. I got away with this.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work.
Right. And, you know, that you're reminding me of something. I just got an email this morning. Our town, on our ballot in Cabot, we have this question that people weren't aware of. I'm sure it was discussed at select board meetings, but I'm about the only one who thinks that select board meetings are better than soap operas, better than professional wrestling. They're way more entertaining.
Yes.
And people should go. But of course, we don't all the time. And so this subject just sort of slipped through. And now it's on the ballot. It's something that they want the town to agree to be part of this diversity We're going to agree that we don't discriminate. And it was all about so that we could have a more safe and secure community, you know. And so I read into like the organization that's putting this out. And it is really interesting because, you know, my experience with towns like Burlington, you know, and other places, you know, like New York and Seattle, mm-hmm. where they are implementing this type of philosophy. It's a philosophy. They're not more safe and secure, you
right.
know?
So exactly.
It's not true. But how do we have this conversation
right.
without, you know, part of why I'm inviting you and other candidates on the show is I'm really concerned about this demonizing of the discussion. You know, we can't have, like, I'm trying to brainstorm, how are we going to have this discussion in my little town without being called names, without, you know, people are
right.
afraid to speak up on
they
these
are.
Issues.
Yeah, they're afraid to assert their, you know, the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't be. You know, we have laws on the law books that we have the right to, you know, freedom of speech as long as it's respectful and not to be persecuted, you know, verbally or physically for expressing how we think and feel. And when people are afraid to talk, we have a problem. And
right.
let's solve it. And the way you got to do that is be brave.
Yes.
Be very brave. Be courageous. And you have to talk about those tough subjects.
Yes.
You have to bring them forward. And so I really feel that us Republicans are stronger and know how to deal with these types of subjects and you know, just promote a general peace and safety in our society. But we have to make some really hard decisions in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sounds like you'd be all in favor of the little campaign I'm on. Is I want to, after
yes.
the election, bring people together of diverse opinions in our communities to humanize with each other. And my friend used a really good word the other day. She said, curious. You know, bring people in a room together who are curious mm-hmm. about other points of view, because we do have such divergent world views right now.
We do. Yes, we do. And I think that it's important to air them, to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn from each other. Oh, I hadn't thought about doing it that way. That's an interesting, you know, concept. And we all have the ability to change, to grow, to become better people. And we do that by learning from each other.
I love that. That's so great. Yeah. And so speaking of common ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, what would be some things that you think you have in common with, say, one of the Democrats you're going to be running against, and something you maybe have different with them? But, you know, both sides of that coin.
Oh, OK. I have some of them that I have met, you know, believe in this environmental protection regulations the way that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned before, conserving and preserving and protecting our natural resources, so our forests and our water. And so that is one area that I'm finding that, you know, is a common common cause amongst all of us.
Great.
And the other one that we don't agree with is that and the Democrats seem to prefer more government employees, more governing of individual citizens' private lives and rights. And the Republicans are saying, no, that's what's causing the war. That's what's causing high taxes, is because you're butting into, you know, the personal lives of our citizens. And you need to keep government as business management and the cultural and spiritual aspect of being a human being is not to be in government. And that's the competition, the war between the Democrats and the Republicans. And so that's what's going on with that. Yeah.
Yeah, well articulated. Yeah. And as someone who was, you know, considered myself liberal years ago, but along the line I'm becoming just independent. I mean, I just feel like I really appreciate everybody. And
right.
I feel like if the table, we could make the table big enough that everyone can come and voice, you know, how they're feeling. But
exactly.
It's really interesting the misinformation about the messaging. You know, how I heard a whole other version, you know, during the Gulf War and things of what Republicans were. You know, it was sort of Fox News was leading the charge, you know, and there was this whole version of it, which has been morphing over time, or maybe my, and I know my awareness has been morphing as well. And we are maturing as a human species.
Yes, we are.
And changing all the time.
Yes, we are.
It's so dynamic.
And
it's
we're
so
getting,
interesting.
You know, wiser all the time. Look at where we've come in science and emissions. You know, when you think back about, you know, our vehicles and our homes back in the 1950s and the 1960s, and we made some mistakes here and there, and how we have slowly worked at improving the quality of our all of our equipment so that we have clean air and clean water. And so that's showing, you know, intelligence, that's showing respect, and we just keep plugging away and doing our best, and, you know, as money is available and as we study and learn and just keep doing what we're doing.
Right, and it's so hopeful. You're right. We have come a long way, and like you were comparing to life in the historical period without running water, how hard things were. I mean, they were.
They,
you
yes.
know, I treasure these modern advancements. and then also we've come a long way with, like, sexism and racism. I mean, the fact that you're a woman running, I mean, I don't even think that's probably even come up, right? I mean, we've come so far.
So we have.
You know?
You know, I was reading an article the other day about Sandra Day O'Connor being the first, you know, Supreme Court judge. Was that in the 1974, I think it was?
Wow.
I mean, wow.
Yeah.
And it took too long.
Uh-huh.
You know, really, it took too long. But yes, we have definitely evolved, and that's great to see.
Isn't it? Yeah, and I love that women are at the table. I think we're bringing this other kind of healing balm right now that can help.
I just feel like women are more, I don't know, more practical, more realistic about the way it really is. And we don't tend to gloss over and don't bury our heads so much. And that we really truly make, you know, some great leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. So with our last just couple of moments, Leslie, bienvenue. And have I been saying that right?
You have.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, definitely.
It's a beautiful
French name.
Yeah. Beautiful name. I like it. Yeah. So any last things you want to say that we have another minute or two? I just want to make sure you have a last chance in case we left anything out.
Okay. Basically, one of the slogans that I came up with that I have been advertising through some mailings that I've made is that I am sincere, I am intelligent, I am bold, and I am pragmatic. And so I think that summarizes my character. And for those of you who don't understand, you know, or don't know the definition of pragmatic, that means I'm sensible, that I'm a realistic, and that I am practical.
Fantastic. And how can folks learn more about you?
I have a Facebook page. And so all of my information about my history, my qualifications, and my personality all is on my stream and my Facebook. So go in and check it out and get to know Leslie.
Oh, fantastic. So you're facing off in the primary.
Yes.
On the 13th.
That's right.
And maybe we can have you come on back. I'm sure there are lots of subjects we can deep dive into after, you know, like your banned books work and things.
Oh, yes. That's through the library, yep.
Yes, the library.
And exactly. And what the restrictions are and why they're there. And again, there's some gender identity issues that were coming up with some of the banned books and parents being upset. Yeah.
Yeah, the libraries are changing. Their content has been transformed, I noticed, because I go into kids' sections.
Because they're
I've
doing
it.
The same thing that, you know, we are, diversity and equal rights.
Right, and global. There's this whole global thing going on. Yeah. Oh, we could talk more about books and kids and
we could.
Libraries.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much for making the trip here today.
I'm happy to have joined you. I appreciate the honor. Thanks.
Thank you. And I look forward to working with you, whether you're a senator or not, next time we meet.
Thanks, Amy.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, folks. You've been listening to The 5-8 Show. Health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And if you want to hear previous episodes, you can go to amyvt.com and find them there. Today's episode was aired live on August 11th and 2024. And just so folks know, next week we're going to have Governor candidate Kevin Hoyt live in the studio. So that's going to be an exciting discussion as well.
Oh, great.
Across the spectrum.
I look forward to hearing that.
Yes, community radio. Everyone's welcome. That includes you folks out there. Have a great day.